The following is a meeting with devotees with His Holiness Srila Satsvarupa Das Goswami, given on August 16th, 2000 in Belfast, Ireland.
This is not going to be a Bhagavatam class because I wasn't able to make it this morning, although I was in Belfast. So I get a chance to speak in a more unrestricted way. And on a favorite theme of mine and of importance to the devotees. I remember one year when Shonaka Rishi Prabhu was having one of his first seminars of the communications department in Belgium, in Radadej. And so different ISKCON communication experts were going to be there to point out how poorly we were doing this and how we had to organize it expertly and to take advice even from persons not in ISKCON as to how to organize these affairs. But Shonaka asked me to come in an unlikely participant, but he wanted to for that kind of audience to also hear the inner life of the preacher. So in a similar way, the temple exists as an outreach so that people can come to festivals and all different programs that are held in the temple. And the devotees who live in the temple go out from the temple to distribute books and to preach in colleges and things like that. But simultaneously, they practice Krishna consciousness themselves. In other words, the preacher has to do something more than just give out Krishna consciousness. He has to be simultaneously getting it himself, herself. I have a nice little excerpt by Prabhupada on just that point. I'll tell you the context. He's talking about pure devotional service, and he talks about the time Lord Chaitanya met Ramananda Roy. And you know, Ramananda Roy was doing the speaking, Lord Chaitanya was playing the student. So as a student he said, tell me, what is the way of perfection and the way to, or tell me what is perfection and how to get to perfection. So Ramananda Roy, he gave three, four different answers, all authoritative, but the Lord said, that's external. Can you say something more? And that is, Prabhupada is talking about that.
In this process, giving chance, of course, those who are preachers, they must be very sincere and serious. Apani achari Prabhu jivari sukha. One must be perfectly in the Vaishnava behavior, sadhasa. Because to hear from professional recitals, there will be no effect. He must be Vaishnava. It is the indication by Sanatana Goswami. Avaishnava mukhaji na puta hai patham nitam sarvanam na kastarma. One who is professional, who is not Vaishnava, from him one should not hear about the holy names of God, Krishna. That is private. Because it will not be effective, rather it will be dangerous. So, preaching was, this Krishna conscious preaching was, we must be very cautious that those who are preachers, they must be pure Vaishnava. Anlaya vilasita sannam, not for money's sake, not for...
That apani achari prabhu sekaya phrase, well, he says one must practice what you preach, as they say in English. Well, before you preach, you should practice. So although Prabhupada says you have to be a pure devotee, one might think, well, then we won't have any preaching, we'll wait and wait till you become a pure devotee. But there has to be at least the basic adherence to Krishna conscious principles. If they're not, if we don't do that, he said it will be dangerous. Dangerous that the people will not get the right thing, and Krishna will not be pleased if you pretend that you're a devotee and tell other people what they should do and you don't. So we know that means, we mean the sadhana of a devotee, that he should chant, especially in kirtan with other devotees, and he has to chant on his own and japa mala, and has to regularly hear about Krishna. But that has to be done not mechanically, it has to be done with all honesty. There's as we can learn different things, even from outside the Vaishnava books that are agreeable to this, there's a source that I've quoted from for a number of times about two great religious persons who stressed the need of honesty by religious practitioners. I've quoted the book in Truthfulness, The Last Leg of Religion, and in the travel book that I wrote, Passing Places, Eternal Truths. There's a book by a Jewish man, Heschel, and he does an interfaith exegesis in this book of two persons, one of them a Christian Lutheran theologian, a famous philosopher, Soren Kierkegaard, and the other a Hasidic Jew who is called by his title, like we would say the Swami. He's addressed as the Kotzker. I want to read a few paragraphs for these as kind of like springboards to look at it in a Krishna-conscious way, how would we apply or not apply what's being discussed here. Okay. First thing will be about the individual. Versus the group, the importance of the individual or the group. True faith. Hope's going to have to get another one of these books. Just broke the pen. True faith, thought the Kotzker, was the yoke of the gifted few called upon to bear it for all mankind. It was through the individual that the many would be uplifted. A man who in his privacy deeply cared for his personal spiritual concerns was in fact more involved with the community than he who mingled with the people in pursuit of material concerns, said the Kotzker. This is an extremely radical view, but he's not the only one who felt this. Any person who believes that somebody praying is actually can bring about social change or can bring about spiritual change for others would be saying this. And the opposite would be yourself not really fixed up spiritually, but running here and running there to do some kind of work, but it can't really change people. In publishing his writings, Kierkegaard's intention was to stir up the crowd in order to get hold of the individual. Religiously speaking, there is no such thing as a public, but only individuals, for religion is seriousness, and seriousness is the individual. So this isn't a kind of snobbishness. It's not that you, in advance, you won't know who that one person is, who he will reach. You can't say, I'm giving a class, but I only want one person to come, one sincere person. Well, who's that going to be? But we may think like that when we preach. We may give out books all day and just think, if I could only get one soul, that's all I can expect. And there are so many wonderful stories in his kind of somebody becomes attracted, becomes very serious, and he tells how it was, how he was touched by a book that arrived his way through a very a strange route. And the Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur and Srila Prabhupada said that all the properties that I have and all the buildings, I would trade them all if I could only reach one pure soul. So that's the sense of preaching, with the idea that preaching is to the individual. Both Kierkegaard and the Kosker were more concerned with man in relation to his own soul than with his relationships to other men. That's Prabhupada too. He had a television interview in Florida, and the man said, from what I understand of your movement, you talk so much about a personal relationship to Krishna or God, you don't speak so much about people having loving relationships with each other. And Prabhupada said, yes, that is not important, because that we have to stress that. If a person develops his relationship with God, then automatically the other will take place. Whereas in Christianity, it's almost very centrally priced that Christ says, I've taught you before, now I'll teach you the greatest law, love thy neighbor as thyself. And then people say, well, who is your neighbor? Well, everybody is my neighbor. So that's like brotherly love, which is good, but brotherly love by the God-conscious person is perfection. Brotherly love on the material plane is not as elevated. Again, these two teachers, their constant effort was to expose the individual to the absolute and its unconditional requirement. And Kierkegaard says, the greatest proof of Christianity's decay is the prodigiously large number of Christians. He said, it had begun at Pentecost when the apostles had admitted 3,000 persons to the church on one day. How could so many truly attach themselves to it at one stroke? And the second topic is... there's a little philosophical point, but it's important that the subjective is more important than the objective. Like in philosophy, if you study the objective truth, or the absolute truth, or if you study God, you study what's out there, what is God, what is the truth. Not so much who you are, who is studying, but Kierkegaard, he's like he did this historically, changed the course of Western philosophy by his presentation that the person is more important than the object, and he did this in a religious context. Kierkegaard's principle of subjectivity may be regarded as a turning point in the history of Western philosophy and thought. A shifting of the balance from object to subject, from the objective world of ideas to the person who has those ideas. Similarly, the Hasidic movement, and particularly the Kosker's teachings, mark a critical point in the history of Judaism, a shift of balance from object to subject. Now, I'll tell you how I think this rather abstract conception may be of importance to us. We learn the philosophy, and now in ISKCON there are so many seminars, Bhakti Shastra certificate, this certificate, that certificate, courses on all the different books of Prabhupada. They're mostly taught in an objective way. that this is the material, it's condensed, it's done in an overview, it's analyzed. Not so much stress on the person who's studying, that by studying, the person changes. Here's a little anecdote. There's a story about a learned man who came to see the Kotsker. No longer young, he was close to 30. The visitor had never before been to a Reb. Reb means rabbi. "Well, what have you done all your life?" the master asked him. "I have gone through the whole Talmud 3 times, answered the guest. "Yes, but how much of the Talmud has gone through you?" Reb Mendel inquired. The Kotsker was deeply distressed that those who claimed to be absorbed in the study of sacred literature did no more than flit across its domains like butterflies. He contended that the purpose of sacred study was to be transformed by it. So that will be in advance when ISKCON is teaching more and more how to be transformed by the teachings. But it's not an easy thing. Not an easy thing. So therefore, what is very important is honesty about it. This is also a favorite topic of my writings. So by making it a favorite, it may seem like I'm claiming that I'm honest. But the paradox is, if you're really honest, you admit that you're not honest. But you have to be very introspective. And Kierkegaard and Kotsker, they valued this over pretense. Even if a person said that I can't practice Christianity, that would be better than to pretend that you were doing that. I have to go on my own now. But this is the crucial point. Being honest. We take vows. I'm initiated. 16 rounds, 4 rules. And then sometimes we don't follow those. There's so many occasions to be dishonest. Sometimes devotees come forward for second initiation before they've actually fulfill the, while not following those. But I see new honesty in ISKCON, and that's very refreshing. New honesty doesn't mean that now everyone starts just being loose in their behavior and say, "Well, I'm just submitting. This is where I'm at." If something like that is done, if we see a change in a devotee, And the change is done seriously. And the change is that they're obviously showing that by what they're doing, they're not as strict as you might think. But they're not making light of that. Then that can be a serious honesty toward advancement. Well, just to give an example, say there was a devotee who was regularly giving classes, and then said, "Oh, I don't think I'm qualified to give classes anymore." And then the secret why would have to come out, or he may not even want to say. He said, "This is personal, but I'm not up to this standard." So we would lose the advantage of hearing from that person, but he would gain by the honesty and then the attempt to improve. But if you take Krishna consciousness in a complacent way. Oh, I'm a member of the Krishna consciousness movement, it's the best movement. So why should I be unhappy if I can't follow all the principles? But no, we should be very happy. We should be very unhappy at our lack of Krishna consciousness and work at it. Now, this point about we shouldn't be complacent even though we're in the best movement. It is the best movement. And that is a cause for happiness. But even within this best movement, our individual advancement, our advancement is going to be individual. I sometimes heard devotees say that as we either stand as a movement, ISKCON, or we're all going to fall as a movement. You know, we're going to go back to Godhead as a movement, or we'll fail to go back to Godhead as a movement. In a certain sense, that's true. But in another sense, each soul is individual. And Prabhupada says we're like birds in a flock flying, and each one has to keep himself up. He gave this example to me when just shortly after I was married, and wrote a letter to Prabhupada asking, is the husband and wife, do they go back to Godhead together? Because the implication was, if they didn't, then it was just a material arrangement. There are some religions that say the husband and wife will be eternal. So Prabhupada wrote back that we're flying in a flock, like a flock of birds, who keep, they're part of a formation. But at the same time, each bird has to keep itself up. You know, you just see the birds flying in a big V, and the strong leader's in front. And if you're flying in the back, you can think, oh, this is very advantageous. I don't have to know when to turn. I just can follow, and no other birds can attack us. That's good, but he's got to keep his wings going, or he'll drop out. So Prabhupada said, therefore, if you both follow in Krishna consciousness and other devotees, then we will meet at the destination in the spiritual life, spiritual world. So, in my married life, sometimes we'd have a fight, and my wife would say, "All right, then we'll meet at the destination," meaning not until then. I can go back to another example from Kierkegaard. He says it's through the gate into the kingdom of God. It's one at a time, one at a time. And he said, don't think you can pass as with the crowd. And it's quite a vivid example, if you picture it, that there's a gate and there's a big jolly parade passing through. And an important place you want to go to, and so you may even be thinking within your heart, well, I'm not very qualified, but I'll just keep step with this parade, and we'll just all go through the gate. But it's not that, you know, a general karma. You have somehow he's so inconceivably confident that Krishna, even if you're all coming at once, he still ascertain the complete situation of each one of us, our desire to have another material body, the greed we have to be back in the spiritual world, and so on. So, and of course, we're very grateful for that, for individual care, that Krishna cares for us with infinite individuality, but also there's no bluffing. One at a time. So we're very much responsible then. I'm saying all this in amplify this point that the inner life of a preacher is sadhana, and sadhana is chanting and hearing. We've all heard that so many times, so I'm just trying to examine it a little more. Is the person really doing sadhana, what is the quality of this sadhana, and is the devotee aware that they are responsible? No one else is ultimately responsible. You can say that the spiritual master is responsible for the disciples, the husband is responsible to the wife, but the soul is responsible to itself. And there may be situations where the guru's disciple goes to hell, and it's not his fault. He taught the best he could, and the disciple is just a rascal. Or the husband, he said, I told her what to do to meet at the destination, but if she's not able to, that's not my fault. And then the individual who fails and goes to hell can't say, oh, but this person didn't do right, that person didn't do right. Then Krishna will know, yes, I know what they did to influence your life, but finally I have to judge you. If somebody misled you, why did you let yourself get misled? So I think this is a relief, actually, to know that I have to be responsible for my own spiritual life, and then take advantage of all these facilities that are offered to us. Oh, just a little bit more, then I hope I can open it for questions. About honesty and self-scrutiny. What does that mean exactly? It means something you have to do regularly. One of my godbrothers, Trivikram Maharaj, said, once we were together in Vrindavan, he said, I just had a very nice dream of Prabhupada. He was sitting on a bed and he asked me, so, do you want me to be your spiritual master? And I said, yes, I very much want to. So I was thinking that was very nice. Because it is on a daily basis that we are offered the chance to surrender to Krishna or Krishna's representative, and on a daily basis that we accept. If the only reason you chant your rounds or go to the temple today is because you did it yesterday, that's not spiritual life. Because the things that we do, there's so much repetition to them, and they can get very dull and burdensome unless there's some way that we see either the progress is before us and we can taste nice progress, or we know that it's a struggle and we're still struggling. So there's a self-introspection or introspection. That may sound mundane compared to things like preaching, sadhana. What's this introspection? Is it mundane psychology? No, but it's consciousness. We say Krishna consciousness. Does that mean that you're actually thinking of Krishna? When you chant the holy names and hear the holy names, you are. But those times when you're not, you're in some other kind of consciousness. But if you're introspective, then you'll notice what it is. This is not Krishna consciousness. I want to be in Krishna consciousness. And then you'll take some action. So in many places, Prabhupada has referred to this also. And although I read how it's an individual thing, there's so much scope for good sangha, not superficial sangha, just for eating prasadam, but sangha on this elevated level, honest level. All right. Hare Krishna. Thank you. So are there any questions or comments? Yes.
Improve. Well, I'm doing all the things that I'm meant to do, and it's like almost like the pat answers once you're following the process, but it may be mechanical, it hasn't had the depths, and I think, well, what can I do to change? And I said, well, maybe that's just where I'm at, but I'm not going to think, well, I don't want to take a step down because it's my safety net. It's just coming in, even if I don't feel like coming in and doing what I have to do, even if I don't feel like doing it, because otherwise I'd hate to think where I'd end up in that sense. But I sometimes wonder, like, even talking, oh, you know, I was thinking today, or should we try and do something to improve my stamina? And then I was thinking, but I don't know what. In the sense of, like looking at it, it's kind of, well, you know, I have this plan, I even put time away there, but it's just, I'm just not breaking through, or I'm not just getting the point. And although I'm trying to be introspective and see the serious nature of it, sometimes I don't always know what actions to take.
Well, asking me is good. Asking people who you trust, and then listening very carefully to the answer and trying to practice it. I was at the health center today, so that's all bodily. But the people are going there with some problem, and the doctor is asking them some questions and then giving them some treatments. You could say some of it is hopeless, but hope against hope. You know, they say what their disease is. I've had it 20 years. I have it, and, well, this is the standard approach to cure, and you try it. And although we're saying that the quantity is not the real story, it's the quality. But at least quantity, we're not some anarchists, spiritual anarchists, that we say, "Well, I can't chant well. I'm not going to chant at all. I'll throw away my Brahman thread and don't sit the Gayatris." I mean, if we should do those things. Even if it's like we can see it's laughably not improving, I'd do it anyway. There's integrity that we made the promise we shouldn't stop, but then we can feel how it's not. At least we don't feel any good result from it. But you can't make the whole judgment on it that it was useless. It's not to be judged just by some spiritual taste. But you say, well, I have been giving the time in my life to do it, but it doesn't seem to be going anywhere. And then there are so many answers that you might get from the spiritual master. And from other devotees, and from your own introspection. I don't find that I have so far to go if I actually introspective as to what's wrong with my sadhana. It pops up pretty easily. It's just been trying to hide it. So start with the willingness to actually approve. Like some of these things I read, they're really, it's really hot stuff. I mean, it's hard to take. So we may not even take it. But if they're saying that, you know, well, religion isn't for everyone anyway, so maybe you're not one of those who's really called. And so, and honestly speaking, you just said you don't even know what to do to improve your sadhana. So you're just a lost case. Why don't you go away and become a materialist? That would be more honest anyway. When you start thinking like that, then you say, wait a minute, I don't write me off. I want to be a devotee. Some people think like that, and they do let themselves out. There were some devotees I know. They went to some Christian sect and said, well, I'd rather be a Christian who's respected for their level of spiritual life than a devotee who's seen, a Hare Krishna devotee who's seen as so fallen. So the standards are high in Krishna consciousness, but that's not a reason to drop out. Well, we would say to that, well, I don't follow that line of thinking. I'd rather be a person struggling to be a devotee of Krishna than a person highly regarded. Oh, then we wouldn't want to insult them. But a person highly regarded at a lower standard. Anyway, I've come to Krishna consciousness. This is my eternal position, and I don't want to leave. I'm just saying it may... It's a little hard to take what you're asking. But we should, rather than always be placated, even if you can be chastised, but you won't give up, that's good. And Prabhupada, he was a master at... He was always capable of chastising his students. And... some devotees think, I think it's probably true, that he would chastise some differently and more than others. And those who couldn't take it very well, he wouldn't chastise so much. And others he would chastise. But he would, not just because you're doing a little service, that you always have to be praised. And the benefit of that is by, just like with, I don't know how to educate young children, but at a certain moment to actually be reprimanded is very good. With love. Because like you're saying, I'm not just speaking about you personally, there's something that's not getting through to us that we understand I should be practicing Krishna consciousness better. Physically and psychologically, I could be doing better, but I'm just not motivated. Yeah, I guess I give that as an example, thinking of a person who is being honest by dropping out. And we have official rules in our movement, and no one is supposed to give a class if they don't follow their vows of initiation, four rules. You shouldn't sit on the Vyasasana and give class. So if you were not following that, and then you stop giving the classes, that would be good. That would be proper honesty. But if you are following, but you feel just hopeless and uninspired and everything, you say, well, why should I? Who am I to preach? No, I don't think you should give up. And preaching will be very good for your heart to do that. And you can put that in your presentation in a way that people will also, it can be an advantage that you say, in a nice way, not constantly, but you say, I'm speaking about something of a level which I certainly haven't reached in my Krishna consciousness. And I like to hear a speaker not say that with every sentence, but with some admission that puts us as equals, not that the preacher is Moses coming down from the mountains with the Ten Commandments and everyone else just has to receive it. But he or she is an imperfect being, but let us share these teachings of Prabhupada and Lord Chaitanya. They're very good. And then we all relish it together. So you would lose a good opportunity for becoming happy and feel the Krishna consciousness is rewarding. And then you would get that and think, oh, if I could only do this and feel like this, it's so nice, so I should practice better so that I can feel like this. Preaching will give you a boost.
Like we have to take care about body, mind, emotions, relationships with others, do this and that. So sometimes it's really hard to, you know, especially when you're a young devotee, you're influence. You have others have influence on you. So I just want to see how you are seeing this changing.
You mean just the fact that one way of life was being emphasized and now it's changed? Yeah, well, that's unfortunate that our movement is like a growing thing, like an adolescent. It has awkward steps of changing this way and that way, and it's embarrassing. We commit so many offenses. Even the non-devotees notice it, and we get brought to court for our mistakes, and we're in different ways we're less competent than and less good and less clear-minded as people, as other people. But you should examine the change. If something was emphasized and now something else was emphasized, if it's a good change, then the fact that there was change is not wrong in itself. Maybe what you were doing was too much in one direction. But if you're becoming cynical, well, first we're told this, and now we're told that, that's natural that you might begin to wonder, oh, then how can I be fully dedicated if I was already fully dedicated to service, now I'm fully dedicated to something else? So that's why some of these changes and fall downs, they breed cynicism in the younger devotees. But we have to find out what is actually Krishna consciousness in Prabhupada's books, and then if somebody tells me otherwise, I won't get confused. I think the things you mentioned, there's nothing wrong with that second group of things. But at the same time, there should be preaching and service is still there. That was my theme in playing the Prabhupada. He said, be a preacher, but to be a preacher, first you have to be a pure devotee. Or, in other words, first you have to be convinced and be practicing and so on. So it's not so much that it's changed, but something has been... the emphasis on service was good, but now a more well-rounded approach, a more sane approach.
Now everyone's very concerned about themselves. And, how are you? How's your emotions? How's my emotions? How am I now? A little bit. But you mentioned something about integrity and honest introspection. And then you said it has to be integrity as well. Because it seems like another extreme, just in this, if there isn't a spiritual balance to it, and that central integrity of the person, then we'll always be extremists to some degree, or we'll always be, well, the Keshe was quoted on Bhaktisiddhanta, I think, talking about there are symptoms of missing the point. You know, this is his expression, and sometimes there's symptoms of us missing the point. That the point, this point of integrity, individual integrity, that's, it doesn't seem, sometimes, because we're looking for taste, higher taste, or if we don't get a higher taste, then we think we have a right to look for another taste, maybe. But there's also a question of determination and of diligence in spiritual life, which could be linked with the integrity question.
What is, could you give me some synonyms or explain more what you mean by integrity?
Integrity. I am trying to tease it out, I suppose. I'm looking at it, we're all looking for taste or a happy position, but sometimes we end up in a comfortable position, a materially comfortable position. We don't end up with spirituality. And we practice for many years, and then we get fed up and we let our hair grow. We go off the beam a little bit. And it's not like that there's been a continuity, that we start off as brilliant devotees, and then we end up as not very brilliant devotees. And we're the last one to find out or something. You know, so we haven't centered ourselves at the beginning, or we haven't understood a point at the beginning. And if we get the point, it's like what Gopi was saying as well. I mean, you're sitting around looking around, so what can I improve? Well, it's like what you said, that it doesn't take you very long if you sit down to think of what to improve. So there's a difference of center, maybe. So who are we, and what are we trying to improve?
Yeah.
And there's the externals, and then there's the internal. And what is the integrity of the internal? What's the determination you have to have? What vow are you taking to yourself? You know, go to the guru and one thing, but it's like this fellow Groucho Marx said this thing which I thought was very funny. He said, I have principles. If you don't like them, I have other principles. You know what I mean? But for a devotee, he has principles and that's it. There isn't any other principles, but the rest of us seem to have a collection.
I seem to remember, I wouldn't know where the source of it is, that, Bhaktivinoda Thakur was supposed to have said that every Ekadasi, which is 2 weeks, you should ask yourself, how have I progressed since the last Ekadasi? You know, being a sort of a milestone that occurs very frequently, and something you could do like that. As a headache sufferer, people with this disease, they're very strongly recommended to keep a diary when you got a headache, what intensity it was, and what do you think the trigger was, how long it was and everything, and that there's a lot of value in doing that. I keep a diary like that for 3 or 4 years, and I don't know, maybe you could work out every Ekadasi a self-introspection on certain points, and then you say, well, what's the value of noticing how it's going? There is a value, especially if it's steadily going down, and you understood why it was. Like I was, well, that in that summer I was really going good because I was taking these medicines and I wasn't doing this and I wasn't doing that. But since then I haven't done that, and that's why I'm in trouble. You can analyze it like that. Of course, that's a mundane example, but. Introspection, in one hand, it is something material applied to spiritual life, and you're the captain of your own fate, or as Prabhupada used to say, a man is the architect of his own fortune. He said that's an English proverb. So you have to see where you're going, and a progress chart, kind of a diary might be kept every Ekadasi. But it's not just writing something down. You have to think about it. Like you said, that the person may be the last one to notice his own falling down. They have to think about it. And there can be like key things. And you hadn't even noticed it. But these teachers I'm reading from, the Kotsker, he had students, and he told them that the preparation for prayer is even more important than prayer. So the idea was, you know, cleaning your heart, concentrating, say prayer being some recitation of the Govinda prayers or something like that, Brahma Samhita. Well, before you go there, as you prepare your mind that you're going to chant the Lord's prayers and so on, and get yourself in the right state, this is the real spiritual life. That's an extreme way of saying it, because he was an extremist. But I like to take from the extremist something that we can use to a certain degree and then not take at all. But I do that, like I listen to Prabhupada's lectures, and I don't want to turn the tape on right away, just, you know, punch it and start doing it while I'm eating or something else, without thinking, now I'm going to hear a lecture by Prabhupada, I may have a tendency to find some criticism in some example he gives, or this is a, or positively put, this is another chance to be with my spiritual master, and I'm so grateful I can hear him speak. Let me be very submissive. So those are prayers before prayer. And in a sense, it's just they're another kind of prayer. In the Bhagavatam, they're like prayers before prayers also. The actual state of holiness to the degree that we can enter it, is almost synonymous to introspection. But we have to live with ourselves. So if we can't change anything, you still have to be kind to yourself. Say, well, this is all I can do right now. That in itself, that's not being slack. Yes?
Isn't it casting a judgment on somebody who was accused of being mechanical? How does one define mechanical?
Mechanical.
Because it can tend to mount meaning that nobody knows what a person's heart is chanting.
Yeah, especially it would be hard for another person to judge, oh, that person, he or she, they're doing their service mechanically. Yeah, how can we say?
Say, for example, somebody is attending a particular time, chanting 2 hours, or attending a temple at a particular time, and he hears all the devotees saying, well, he's mechanical. How can they know that? Particularly those devotees are seniors, and they themselves never come, they take class, but they never come on time or mobility or any other service. They come once a week.
And say that the other devotees are mechanical?
Well, you know, indirectly. How? And how do they know in their heart what's in the other person's heart?
Uh-huh.
I mean, he might be sitting 2 hours because it's a continuous flow for him, so that he finishes his chanting. First, you can explain what mechanical means.
It means when you don't have any ardor or enthusiasm or even attention into the service that you're doing, whether it's worshiping the deity, dressing the deity, or cooking for the deity, or chanting the Lord's holy names. It's hard to think of somebody lecturing to a group of non-devotees without dropping his mechanical, because it requires so much surrender, or distributing books. But yes, when the action is on like an automatic pilot, and he's just doing it. That's what we mean, mechanical or superficial. But they just feel obliged to do it. Prabhupada says, gives an example like a person may feel, oh, these people, they're giving me a place to stay. I mean, he's living in the temple. And so I have to do it. Or my guru says I have to do it. It's like that. And it's hard to keep that up. After a while, then you'll just, it'll occur to you that why do this? This is so much against my will. I'll just do some other things. But if you're engaged in a good fight, as we call it, say to pay attention in your japa, then it can be mechanical, but then you try it. One good shot for a moment of enthusiastic hearing Krishna, and then mechanical. So that you engage in the fight to bring the mind wherever it goes, bring it back to a concentration on the self. So you're saying that almost like there is no such thing as mechanical.
No, there is.
Yeah. But the benefit of spiritual is so good that even if they touch it, it's good.
Yeah.
And others shouldn't criticize them, shouldn't even judge them. Yes? Oh yeah, it's a wonderful thing if you have that kind of conscience. We talk Krishna consciousness. It's also Krishna conscience, and I must do it. It's a kind of honor of oath. That's another thing people may not know, whether you did your 16 rounds or not. Who's to know? People say, I wonder how many rounds Prabhupada chanted, and it's just a very personal thing. So you should value that feeling that although it's poor, I'll stay up and I'll finish the rounds, or I'll just do them. I don't want to fall into that lack of chanting. I know it will lead to difficulty. It's an offense. The holy name is a person. The holy name is a form of Krishna in sound, and it's considered an offense to Krishna that you don't chant with attention, or if you don't chant the prescribed number of rounds. So you'll even feel a little bit like you let God down, you know. And then when you do it, you feel it wasn't very good, but at least have honor, some honor that I did what I said I would do. Because the nature of the offense is Krishna will take it personally and will say, then why not just go on not chanting my name? You did it today. And if you don't have that drive to chant, maybe tomorrow you won't do it also. You got away with it. So I think what you're describing is good, even though it may not be the highest motivation. It's good.
You were talking about also the importance of the inner life before preaching, and then also there's discussion about mechanicalness and those. I was wondering, like on the one hand, we're on the stage of practicing our sadhana under rules and regulations and so on like that, and I was wondering, I guess I feel for myself sometimes I have to sort of, like, on the one hand, I have to, admit to myself where my shortcomings are, but sometimes I feel like I have to sort of take hold of the things in my sadhana that I do actually have taste for, and try and develop them. I mean, they're almost like the things that keep me going.
Yeah, I know what you mean. But you do that at the expense of the ones that you don't like?
No. But I guess I was just wondering, but sometimes like I feel like, sometimes like I guess I can't always beat myself up about my lack of taste or even my lack of love for Krishna. So sometimes like when I hear it, I like, which it's right, you know, it's what you say, I have no love for Krishna, and I think, wow, that's a very stark thing. And I guess in one sense it's true, but in another sense I sort of feel like to keep going I have to sort of acknowledge the things that I, you know. I was just wondering, like...
Yeah, I guess that's a kind of positive thinking. If the things that we like to do are endorsed and even encouraged by our spiritual guides, we can take that as a sign that we just can go with it all the way and find different things in the scriptures that also encourage us. We may have a very strong tendency for it, and it's definitely the strongest strain in our Krishna consciousness. Well, that's good. We should just go with it. And it may be that for that person, chanting japa, say, or other things, they do them, but they can't do them with that love. Well, first of all, they should try to make the thing that they like to do as Krishna consciousness as possible, and do at least a minimum of other things. And, well, that would be part of introspection, too, to understand that I don't have any of that higher love for Krishna, but I'm not outside of Krishna consciousness, and be faithful. Surround yourself with Krishna consciousness as much as possible, the pictures, the murtis, the life and everything, and then you can conclude that not that I'm in a self-hate way, but I'm a budding bhakta. We've heard devotees have gone to psychiatrists, or we've heard even as buzzwords in psychology that there's such a thing as low self-esteem. And devotees are also conditioned souls who suffer from the same psychological ailments as others. So a devotee may have symptoms of low self-esteem. They come to the temple, they had it, and they join the movement, they still have it. And someone has given it to them. You know, their parents may have given it to them. You're no good. You can't do anything. And now they become a devotee, and they think, you're no good, you don't love God. So they should get rid of that, and be encouraged that what you do is going up to Krishna, and he's appreciating it, but there's a lot more to go than what you have. And so we can go along feeling good and sharing that with devotees. So the devotees in the temple don't all go around with like long looks at, we don't love God, we don't love God. Okay, thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai.